Hi, I'm David Boyer, and I want to let you know we're in our March membership campaign. We are listener-supported radio, and twice a year, we ask for your help. I invite you to contribute right now to support local independent journalism. Go to kalw.org and click donate. Thanks.
KALW.
Even before the coronavirus, we were one of the very few services to be able to serve undocumented communities.
Low-wage immigrant workers are especially vulnerable during the Bay Area's historic shelter-in-place order, and some of the programs available to them are struggling to stay up and running.
A lot of them just kept saying, we'll be all right. They're just surviving, and they've been able to survive.
We'll hear about the challenges these workers face and what county officials are doing to help them. We'll also check in on the latest news you need to know about the coronavirus in the Bay Area. And we'll hear from an artist who's dismantling the box of beauty standards by leading a movement to reclaim ugly.
I am too big, too juicy, too dynamic to fit in any category.
I'm Henat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. It's day two of the shelter-in-place order for the San Francisco Bay Area. We're starting today's show with the latest update on the effort to contain the novel coronavirus. Here's KALW's news director, Ben Trefney.
We'll start with the numbers. As of the latest count, there are 598 positive cases of COVID-19 in California, not including folks still on the Grand Princess cruise ship, which is still docked in Oakland with crew members on board. 13 people in California have died. The expectation is that all those numbers are going to rise, and rise quickly. As Bay Area residents get used to the new normal, the economic impacts are becoming clear. BART, for example, is suffering mightily. Ridership is down 85% or more, and the agency is looking to ask the state government for $55 million to offset loss in revenue. All the state's campgrounds have closed, though trails and beaches not attached to campgrounds remain opened, and almost every school in the state is shut down at this point. The expectation was that would be until early April, until Governor Gavin Newsom dropped an opinion that floored many Californians.
Let me be candid. This is a very sober thing to say, and I can't say this with certainty, but I can say this quite learnedly. Don't anticipate schools are going to open up in a week. Please don't anticipate in a few weeks. And I say that because one needs to be honest, and I need to be accountable to you. I don't want to mislead you. To 6+ million kids in our system and their families. They need to make some plans at a time when a lot of plans are already being curtailed, but planning with kids is some of the most challenging planning. I would plan and assume that it's unlikely that many of these schools, few if any, will open before the summer.
Yeah, that became big news, and it surprised and upset many parents and their kids. Some question whether distance learning is viable, and others are just as concerned about the loss of their children's social activities. We've been working with high school students around the Bay Area as part of our podcast TBH, By, About, and For Teenagers. So we reached out to one of the reporters, Hannah Nee. She's a senior at Presentation High School in San Jose. Administrators there decided to send students home and moved all teaching online about a week ago. Here are her thoughts about how that's going.
Online learning, I found, is actually not that bad. There's a lot of really great software that allows teachers to project their screens, send and receive assignments, and give tests. And I've been really appreciative that my school has the infrastructure and resources to adapt to this current crisis. But online learning, by no means do I think, is a good substitute for physical learning, like where you're physically inside a classroom. The other day, one of my teachers, she actually called WebEx, which is a platform we use, a zoo, because the teacher's face is always projected on the screen, but depending on the platform, students don't have to show their face, which is what we all usually choose to do because it's just kind of awkward. So the teachers are just talking to a blank screen the entire time, and everyone feels kind of robotic and strange. So yeah, it's definitely a weird thing that is happening in the age of coronavirus. Outside of school, my friends and I are all kind of freaking out. Since we're seniors, we're worried about things like graduation and prom being canceled, which are two events that are basically the pinnacles of your high school experience. There have been talks about hosting virtual proms through Club Penguin or Zoom, and I'm trying to imagine it in my head, but I honestly can't see it working out. or at least giving us the experience we want, where we can dress up together, dance all night long, take pictures, and share unhealthy food. And as trivial as that sounds, I've been looking forward to doing these activities with my friends since freshman year.
That's high school senior Hannah Nee, a reporter for our podcast TBH, who's sheltering in place in San Jose. On the other end of the age spectrum, we understand that people over the age of 65 are generally considered to be amongst the most at risk of contracting the disease. And some supermarkets are setting aside hours exclusively for senior citizens, since shopping for food is still allowed under current shelter-in-place rules. Markets making that extra effort include Albertsons and Safeways, where senior citizens and at-risk people can shop between 7 and 9 a.m. on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Also, Rainbow Market in San Francisco is adjusting its store hours so people over the age of 60 can shop between 9 and 10 a.m. every day. And finally, while grocery stores are doing a bang-up business right now, restaurants are pretty much not. Now that Bay Area residents can't eat out, many establishments are finding themselves forced to discard their food. That's where a group like Food Runners can help. The nonprofit picks up leftover food from restaurants and caterers and delivers it to people in need. According to its director, the organization has more than 80 new volunteers, so they're able to take food that would otherwise go bad and put it to good use. In San Francisco, I'm Ben Trefney for Cross Currents.
Thanks, Ben. Ben Trefney is KALW's news director, and our news team is providing updates at our website, kalw.org. And tell us what you want to know. Call our newsroom at 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. Or send your questions to news@kalw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. The Bay Area's historic shelter-in-place order is intended to slow the spread of COVID-19, but it could have a profound impact on low-wage workers who live month to month and are unable to go to work. KALW immigration reporter Teresa Katsourilis has more.
Irmelinda Sanchez-Dulcero has been cleaning houses in Oakland for over a decade. She's worked with some of her clients for years. And when I talked to her on the phone last week, she'd just lost one of them. She says, my employer grew up here, but her parents and whole family are from China. They're being careful, so today I couldn't go to work. They told me I could come back in a month and a half or so. That was before Alameda County issued its shelter-in-place order. Now, Ermelinda's worried about paying her bills, and she's worried about her safety when she does go back to work. Remember, she's a domestic worker, which requires her to get really close to other people's germs. We don't know what we can really do, she says. Wash your hands, wear gloves and a mask. Nothing guarantees that we won't get sick.
I think that this hits low-wage workers across the board.
Ken Jacobs is the director of UC Berkeley's Labor Center. He studies low-wage work in California, and he says that low-income immigrant workers are particularly vulnerable during the COVID-19 crisis. People like Irmelinda are more likely to have jobs that require them to interact with other people. California's immigrant communities are disproportionately represented in certain restaurant jobs, for instance, as well as cleaning and caregiving industries.
And so people are at risk of losing employment, or are losing employment because we're seeing events shutting down, we're seeing less tourism, less travel.
Thousands of Bay Area residents were laid off last week, and local officials expect unemployment to spike under the shelter-in-place order. The state is encouraging workers to apply for unemployment, but because workers like Irmelinda are independent contractors, they aren't eligible for unemployment insurance. And if they manage to keep working,
that both puts them more at risk of getting sick and if they work while sick, more at risk to transmit to others.
There are local nonprofits and county programs set up to help workers like this, but they're getting hit hard by COVID-19 too. Here's Gabby Galicia, executive director of the Street Level Health Project.
Even before the coronavirus, we were one of the very few services to be able to serve undocumented communities.
Her organization serves low-income immigrant workers in Oakland's Fruitvale neighborhood. It provides free health screenings and breakfasts to community members, including many that are homeless or uninsured. But Gabby says they were worried their crowded offices might help spread the virus.
On our busiest day, you could probably potentially have 100 people here, plus staff, and it's definitely very cozy when we're in here.
So, in the middle of last week, they decided to limit their services. On Monday night, they gave away 35 bags of emergency groceries, then closed their offices altogether. Gabby says she and her staff are figuring out how to continue their outreach work remotely. Their interpreters are planning to call Indigenous community members to make sure they're getting vital information in their languages. Gabby adds that some immigrant workers are afraid to seek healthcare anywhere else. Some community members are uninsured. Others are afraid to use Medicaid because of President Trump's public charge rule, which threatens to deny green cards to immigrants who use certain public services. And in an urgent phone call yesterday, Gabby also brought up another problem, ICE raids.
If they start seeing on the news that there's ICE raids, people are not going to go receive the health care that they need or go even food shopping. That is a big reality.
On Monday, Immigration and Customs Enforcement conducted early morning raids in Los Angeles. Gabby says this isn't just inhumane. It could be dangerous for public health.
We already see a lot of people in the detention centers that on a yearly basis just get influenza. And we've seen even kids die there in the detention centers. And so the concern really is of just a massive outbreak of coronavirus.
Advocacy groups across the country are urging ICE to stop conducting raids during the pandemic. The ACLU is also suing the government to release a group of migrants in a Washington state detention center whose pre-existing conditions would put them at risk in an outbreak. State and county officials are piloting a flurry of social programs that could help workers like Ermelinda. San Francisco, San Jose, and Alameda County have suspended all residential evictions for people who are directly impacted by COVID-19. Workers who've been laid off because of the virus, for example, or workers who are quarantined. A number of Bay Area school districts are offering free meals to students during school closures. And San Francisco is also offering emergency childcare to families who have to keep working while their children are out of school. In the meantime, programs like the Street Level Health Project are continuing to operate as best they can. Director Gabby Galicia says she's talked to community members about the crisis.
A lot of them just kept saying, we'll be all right. They're just surviving, and they've been able to survive.
A lot of low-wage immigrant workers have already faced war, poverty, fear, and persecution, says Gabby. So this is something we can get through, too. In Oakland, this is Teresa Kotsarilis for Cross Currents.
Teresa is KALW's immigration reporter. You can find more of her stories at kalw.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Henna Baba. You may be feeling there's a lot of ugly things happening in the world right now. Well, we're going to pause and talk about discovering beauty. Writer and educator Vanessa Rochelle Lewis was bullied for her dark skin, body size, and sexuality. She did a lot of personal work to love and embrace her full self and decided to flip the idea of ugly. Vanessa is founder of the Reclaim Ugly movement, which hosts workshops and conferences to help people heal from what she calls internalized impacts of uglification. She spoke with KALW's Janae Darden on why she says ugly stands for uplift, glorify, love yourself.
The way you described yourself is a range. From yes. educator and performer to a fairy mermaid gangster for the revolution to a dom mistress.
Oh, yeah.
So who is Vanessa?
Oh, my gosh. Who is Vanessa? First off, I'm going to say I am too big, too juicy, too dynamic to fit in any category. So I had to have all the categories.
You have all the categories.
Break the boxes with my whips. So I'm an artist and I'm an activist, and the main way that I engage with my activism is through art and through connection with other people. I think a lot about how we exist in the world. I'm really interested in imagining a life where everyone, regardless of age, race, breed, whatever, gets to center pleasure and joy. And I'm interested in pleasure and joy because I know that if we're centering pleasure and joy, it means we're eating well, we're sleeping well, we're well rested, we're not trying to be in competition with other people, we're not fighting other people. And if we're eating well, sleeping well, well rested, and not in competition, it means that we're living a liberated life. Right? And I'm here for liberation. So I think that's the best way to describe me.
You grew up in L.A.
I grew up in South Central Los Angeles.
You grew up in South Central L.A. And I've lived in L.A. So I know what that community is like. I got a lot of love for South Central L.A. Mm-hmm. L.A. is a place where upholding the beauty standard.
Oh, yes.
Quote unquote, the beauty standard is serious.
Very serious.
It's serious. And you went through a lot as a kid.
I went through so much as a kid. So I want to start off and say my parents taught me that I was beautiful from the beginning. They always told me you are beautiful. You are a beautiful little dark skinned girl. And I believed it with my whole heart and soul until I stepped out my house. Mm-hmm. And the world was like, psych, just kidding. Why are you so dark? Why does your forehead look like that? Why does your teeth look like that? Why doesn't your hair grow? Et cetera, et cetera. And by the world, I mean other little children, and specifically other little black children. They used my blackness as an excuse to be mean to me, mm-hmm. which means that they were being mean to themselves.
Mm-hmm. And you don't realize that because I went through something similar growing
yeah.
up, colorism, right? Mm-hmm. And you don't realize that as a child, when your own people are picking on you about your skin complexion, that it's also a reflection of their own
yes,
self-hatred.
Their own pain. Mm-hmm. And for me, like it took me damn near 20 years to get to the point where I understood internalized racism and how internalized colorism is about surviving in a white supremacist society. Mm-hmm. You know, it's about figuring out how to feel beautiful and worthy in a world that tells us our dark skin, you know, and the darker your skin is, the least worthy, the least intelligent, the least capable you are, you know. So I internalized it a lot. And the way that I internalized it as a child was a desire to escape the hood. What I eventually realized, and it's because of a librarian. Oh, my gosh. Yay, writers. So I had this librarian who realized I was always, like, renting out lesbian books from our school library.
Okay.
And she gave me this book called Does Your Mama Know?, which had Audre Lorde and Pat Parker and all these amazing black feminist writers. Mm. And I was in love with their writing, and I started reading more, and I learned about internalized racism from these amazing black lesbian women. Mm-hmm. And it changed my relationship to my body and to my classmates, to the black kids that I grew up with. I started to have compassion. I saw that this thing, colorism, and specifically the way we uglify ourselves, is a result of what was done to us. I've decided that part of my goal, part of my vision, is to imagine a world where we all love each other just because. Beauty is an opinion. Ugly is an opinion. How do we get in touch with our own personal selves enough to understand what we actually find beautiful? Not what we're spoon-fed to believe is beautiful or spoon-fed to believe is ugly, straight out coerced and forced to believe is ugly. But what do we really, what lights our souls up when we see it, when we taste it, when we engage with it? So when I think about like this fear of being ugly, I'm like, what is it really a fear of looking away a certain way? Or is it a fear of the way people treat you when they think you look a certain way? And if the fear is how I'm going to be treated, then we need to create a world where people are treated well. And I think that's one of the principles of this organization, Reclaim Ugly, is that we are healing with celebration. We are going to heal with joy. We are not about to continue to swim in the pain of our trauma. You know, we're fighting back that trauma with as much pleasure and feel good as we can.
So can you pass on some of your magical advice for people who have kids, who are struggling with their looks? Because they don't fit into a box of color or of gender, of sexuality, of body size, of you know, ability.
I just want to say, I think the first thing to do is celebrate your children as frequently, as much, as often as possible. Celebrate them for who they are, not what they look like, not what they've accomplished. I mean, celebrate these things, but celebrate them for their existence, fully and wholly. The second thing I'm going to say is, and this is, I think, something vulnerable, but I would ask parents also to, like, check out your gaze. What messages are you unintentionally giving your children in regards to how you see yourself, how you treat yourself? What are you telling them when they decide how they want to dress, when they decide how they want to present themselves? Are you affirming that they deserve to live in a world where they can be whoever they want? Or are you asking them to change themselves so they can fit in and have things a little bit easier? So I really, you know, I think that we can big our children up, but I also really want to have a conversation about how do we parent our babies and how do we parent ourselves in front of our babies and what messages are we giving then? I think if your kid is struggling with self-esteem, like, you need to honor yourself in front of them. The world can be cruel. The world does uglify people. No matter how many times I tell you you are beautiful, you are going to leave this house and somebody is going to have something to say. That's about them.
What about, what advice do you have for adults? Because there's adults still walking around perpetuating this uglification.
Absolutely.
Because they don't feel beautiful.
Yes. So the first off, I think the biggest thing I'm going to say is, who are you surrounding yourself with? Like, what are you surrounding yourself with? Are you surrounding yourself with friends and people who uplift you, who glorify you, who love you no matter what, who are going to give you the affirmative, kind, encouraging feedback and support you need that are going to hold space for, like, the real genuine healing process? Or are you surrounding yourself with people that might reflect back dominant views around what's beautiful and what's not? So really make some choices around who you surround yourself with. Then, What media are you consuming, right? Because we're feeding our bodies something. We're feeding our hearts and our brains something. So what are you feeding yourself? What ideas and what bodies are you feeding yourself? How can you consume media that's going to make you feel good about being alive?
That was Vanessa Rochelle Lewis, founder of the Reclaim Ugly movement. She was speaking with KLW's Janae Darden. Now, Vanessa did have an event. It was postponed, of course, but she's hosting an online Reclaim Ugly open mic. It's this Friday at 6 o'clock, and you can go to KALW.org to find out the details. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.